Are you scared?
Call to order the state or the Committee on Education for April 15th, 2015.
15.
Okay. First, I want to say we do have, I know this will surprise a lot of you, we have some amendments that came in on House Bill 3499, so it will be carried over. The work session on 3499 will be carried over. Okay, with that, I open a public hearing on House Bill 30. Representative Ennis isn't here. Is that his?
He's not coming, nobody is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 3166.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3166 directs the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to establish standards that allow certain persons to teach non-core courses.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Winger from Baker City. Welcome again. Quick trip?
Yeah. Actually, it wasn't bad.
Good. Nice weather.
There was limited snow, which is always a positive. And traffic wasn't too bad. Construction on only three sites, so
that's
kind of whip, whip, whip.
No, if Cabbage Hill is good, then that's the rest of it is good.
Thank you very much for seeing me. I am Walt Wagoner. I am the superintendent of schools, Baker 5J School District in Baker County. We have five high schools in Baker that we actually sponsor, two uncharter schools, one innovative high school, Elkhorn Juvenile Detention Center, and our regular bricks and mortar high school. And our regular bricks and mortar high school has 480 kids in it. And last year we opened up something called the Baker Technical Institute. And in the Baker Technical Institute, 120 kids signed up. We have 300 signed up for next year, which raises a bit of an issue to us. We also include in that the middle school, and we have partnered with Blue Mountain Community College. So we are running projects. We have the middle school is doing a house restoration. We have a brownfield project that the high school, mostly Eagle Cap Innovative High School, is operating. We have a culinary arts program. We have ag products and aquaculture, construction stations, health sciences that include phlebotomy and certified nurse assistants. We have a business branch, we have an IT branch, and we do science, technology, engineering, and math. We want to be able to take persons from our region. Our school district is roughly the size of Delaware. That's according to my transportation director. I haven't actually verified that. But he says it takes 95 minutes to drive a bus across it. In our school district, we have Marvin's and Valens, which are manufacturing people, and then we have Shaw's, which is a computer place, and we have the BLM, and we have this and that. Okay, we have hospitals. And we want to be able to pull experts from our area for maybe 5 hours a week to teach diesel mechanics or to teach roofing or to teach house painting or whatever. And that is not reading, writing, math, science, social studies, health, and fitness. That doesn't fit into the ESEA core subjects. What we're looking for is permission to pay persons as a teacher to do diesel mechanic for us and not to have to change their whole freaking career to come and help us. Okay? And not to have to take 18 college credits when, in some cases, they never got to high school, much less college. But they happen to be expert at what they're doing. And if we ask them salient questions like, can you name a bad student for us? They will make the right answer, which is, no, I can't name a bad student. All students deserve a fair shot. Instead of, yeah, I remember Billy Bob in fifth grade, and he was a real jerk, and but the other side of it. So they would be quality teachers, and the persons of good character in our community, they will take an FBI check, they will take a fingerprint check, they will do all of the things necessary to be a teacher. But what we're talking about is limited service of persons with expert skills in what I would call guild skills. Okay, these are not in typical point. These are not math science people. These are blue collar persons in the community, and we need to have the option to bring them in and not have to babysit them. And they will do a good job with our kids in career and tech ed. Yes, in science, technology, and math, because if you think about a brownfield project, we've gone out and got a contractor, and the contractor shows up with a hazardous waste management person, shows up with construction persons to do demolition, shows up with a geologist to make sure that the plume flow is properly managed, etc. We have to put a teacher in charge of that in order to let kids work with those people, and the teacher is going to, that particular teacher happens to be a science teacher and she's world class. She can give science credit where it manages. If the kids have to write a report, we can get an English teacher that's highly qualified to give that credit, etc. You understand how that works? It's a team approach as opposed to a teacher, but we need to be able to allow persons to touch the instructional process of kids outside of the normal constraints of TSPC. We have to have a master's degree because we can't find any master's degrees in education and diesel mechanics simultaneously. We've been really short on that group. So I'll give you three examples of what we're trying to get accomplished. We have a teacher with 36 years of successful teaching experience. He's a math teacher. He's been obviously a lifetime coach. He has multiple state championships as a football coach. He's a pretty good guy with kids. They come into the weight room for him in July when they would rather do other things because he makes a really good relationship with kids. In the summers, he runs a spec or by contract house construction company. He'll build your house for you, and he does a good job with it. So he's expert at business construction, good people skills, and highly effective as a teacher. It's really tough to get him past TSPC to teach carpentry. So we would like to have personal control internally that allows us to take somebody with proven skills and allow them to give kids an option to get carpentry credit from him. Second example. Our ag sciences program, as it expands, and it is expanding rapidly, needs a diesel mechanic. Diesel mechanics in our area make more money than our teachers, significantly more. Diesel mechanics they rise to their position by experience, for instance, in the military, and the diesel mechanics we've been able to find currently don't seem to have a lot of college degrees. We found a couple in Pendleton, which is 105 miles away, that have associate degrees, but we haven't found any in Baker that meet our needs in terms of education. But they meet our needs in terms of being persons of good character and able to effectively communicate with kids. And again, we need permission to make them a teacher. They're highly experienced local citizens. According to TSPC, they can't run a classroom because they don't have a bachelor's degree or a master of arts degree in teaching. We think they will be successful. And I've got personal experience in the past in another state where I ran a pre-apprenticeship program, and I had plumbers and electricians and framers that were able to work with kids and did a great job. And by the way, apprentices start at about $56,000 a year, and our teachers start at $32,000. So for our kids, and for the economy of Oregon, and for the promise of Oregon, this is a really good option for us. The third example, our middle school kids renovate a house each year. And we assign a shop teacher as oversight, and then we get volunteers in the community to come in and help with some of the specific details. Every once in a while, there's stuff that an ordinary shop teacher hasn't run across. We believe we should be able to hire those people so that we can guarantee year by year that we have a continuous, reliable support base for that project. So our brownfield project requires a wide range of skills in science, math, engineering, and technology. We understand in those subject areas, ESEA requires that we have highly qualified personnel to run the brownfield project, and we have that person. But when you get to some of the sideline issues, the construction process and so on and so forth, we need to have the flexibility to bring in non-core people and allow them to be teachers. And let me make this clear. A paraeducator has a sight and sound responsibility. So if we hire somebody as a para because they have special skills, a certified teacher has to oversee them with insight and sound. That's why we want these people to be certified teachers, because then they can take three kids and go and do a project special, and they're persons of good character and they're effective teachers, and they don't have a sight and sound responsibility. We don't have to babysit the local pediatrician when he's talking about infant care. okay, which is a little bit silly. But right now, that's what we have to do. This is a person with 12 years college and 15 years professional experience, and when they come on site, we have to babysit them. And that's ridiculous. So we would like to be able to take these specialists and allow them to work with kids. So we're not asking, I want to make it clear, we're not just asking for any old bum off the street to be able to teach. What we're asking for is extremely professional people that have a lot of experience, whether it's diesel mechanic or sheetrock or being a pediatrician or a lawyer, but allow us locally to oversee permission for them to be treated as a teacher, paid as a teacher, which is a pay cut for most of them, but in to the extent that we need them, 5 hours a week, 15 hours a week, whatever it is, limited service. We're not talking about full-time careers here. Yeah. We're talking about being able to designate a particular person to teach diesel mechanics and whatever time that takes. And we're, 480 kids. We're a small district. It's not a big deal there. So House Bill 3166 is a bill to allow local communities to manage their instructional process with the flexibility to hire, oversee, and manage highly effective specialist instructions as valued. I want to thank you for your yes vote and your active support of House Bill 3166, and I would entertain any questions that you might have of me.
Okay, do you have any questions of Mr. Okay, how about Representative Peluso?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What are you hearing from the unions about this?
Not a word.
Really? Excellent. Good answer. Thank you.
He hasn't asked him.
That was the follow-up.
Representative Frederick.
Yes, that would be my follow-up. Have you asked them? And then I have another question.
That's kind of a sensitive question. I have talked to the leadership and talked to the leadership every month about things that are on this, and I brought this to the leadership. They have not responded in any positive or negative way. So they are not concerned typically about what we do at Eagle Cap, and they are not concerned typically about what we do with our innovative programs. So I don't believe they have an issue on it, but I haven't asked them to have an issue on it.
Well, and maybe just a follow-up on this. Out in your area, I mean, in the metro area and in the Eugene area and Springfield and so on, there are actual training centers that the, like, whether it be carpenters, whether it be sheet metal, whether it be plumbers, whatever, have training centers. Are there any training centers out in the east? I didn't think there were. So, and that's usually where the training of the apprentices and so on goes on, and there's the cooperation. So yeah. I thought maybe that. I didn't think that there was one out there. So.
No. We work with BMCC, and we are tight partners with them. I may have mentioned last year our students earned approximately 7,500 college credits. And that's because we have smart classrooms. We work with Lynn Benton. We work with Chemeketa. We work with BMCC. We'll work with anybody that will work with us. Mm-hmm. But no, we don't have any training centers that I'm aware of.
I didn't think so. Okay. Did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I did have a follow-up. I have friends of mine who are incredible physicists. Mm-hmm. I have friends of mine who are great carpenters, experts, terrible in terms of dealing with kids, would have no idea of how to deal with a classroom, not just a full classroom, but three or four kids. They know what to do, or as somebody put it to me, they know what to do in a shop. They're not real sure what to do in a shop class. Mm-hmm. How do we assure that we're going to have that kind of situation? As you said, you want to be able to have somebody just go off with three kids and work on something. Mm-hmm. How are you going to have any kind of, what kind of screening are you going to be able to have in order to understand whether they are in fact ready to do this kind of work?
I think that there's no amount of expertise in content that will replace the ability of a human being to establish a relationship with another human being. Okay, with that predicate, now we're talking about what a teacher is. Okay, so a teacher is not an engineer, physicist, or doctor. A teacher is somebody who works on a day-to-day basis with groups of kids effectively. We know that. I know that. As superintendent of schools, Baker School District, if I'm going to hire you, to teach children, the first thing you're going to have to do is get by my hurdles that convince me that Mr. Frederick knows exactly that each kid is valued, that each one is important, and that you know how to make a relationship with them so that you enhance and cause them to be successful. Now, your great knowledge about law or legislation or whatever is useful, but you are a teacher of human beings with content as a tool. You are not a teacher of physics or engineering or doctoring with students over here. It's the other way around. First you deal with the kids, then you happen to have expertise. And we are going to select our people on that basis, not on the basis of a really cool degree, but on the basis of whether or not they build a relationship with kids and family to enhance the opportunities for kids and family. And if they don't, we'll just have to tough it and move on, which is, you know, we have had individuals that we've brought in that vanished within a day, because it was clear by noon that they weren't connecting. Had a plumber, and he couldn't stop dropping F-bombs.
Yeah, we don't
Thank
do
you
that
very
in
much.
Education. Okay, how about Representative McLean and Representative Reardon?
Well, sir, you bring up a very good, a very important topic, because we used to have at the high school where I taught for 42 years, we used to have a welding shop, a wood shop, we had a greenhouse, we had an automobile, you know, where you fixed cars and all of this. And those, a lot of those teachers are retiring. Right. And we haven't had anybody replacing them.
Nope.
Part of it has been money, because some of those classes are not being offered any longer, but we really don't have the expertise in some of those areas. And as our chair pointed out, we've had some of the industries who have taken over some of that apprenticeship work by allowing, you know, sort of dual enrollment, and those experiences through the community colleges or through their own unions. And but I guess what I just to follow up what Representative Frederick said, there we all know that there's a standard that has to be met as far as being able to successfully, as you say, be with a group of students and actuate, you know, some good, you know, some good types of lessons that are going to help them with the skills that you're trying to teach them. And so it sounds a little scary to think about, you know, 178 districts figuring out their own criteria for every single non-core class as far as what's necessary for the standards for being able to bring a particular type of either program and or classroom management or anything of that nature. So I guess I want you to speak just a little bit about what are you trying to do? Have you codified in your mind some of the standards that are basic to a teaching certificate or to a teaching skill level or something of that nature?
Well, these people will be, first off, I'm going to have to think for a second just to try and codify clarity of position. But these people are part of a team.
Yeah.
And this team is taking care of children. And whether these children are 18 years old or, you know, this particular program for us wouldn't go below seventh grade. So it's 13-year-olds and above. But what we're looking for, and I come back to this, is persons of good character that we trust. And my school board trusts that the administrators and teachers in the district know enough to facilitate, support, and cooperate with persons that are going to accomplish specific, intense tasks. Okay? And our experience has been that the people that engage in this with our oversight are really embarrassed if they make a mistake, part one. And part two, generally don't make mistakes. We've been very fortunate with that. As much as possible. It's just, you really diminish the capacity of the system when you have to babysit all the time with professionals that, you know, if a science teacher is working a brownfield project and you got construction going over here and you got reports being written over here and you got hazardous waste measurements being going, you know, a chemistry project going on over here, and a geology check on the plume, maybe drilling holes and so on. You get all that going. The teacher cannot manage all of that. And we're going to have a real problem with that, in that opportunities for kids will be lost. Because when we fix the brownfield project, we're going to fix it. Then we're going to sell it, and we're going to get another one, and we're going to do it again.
Okay.
We don't want to have to babysit those people. But we're going to, as a criteria for them to come and work for us, mm-hmm. they're going to have to meet the standards that we put on every individual that walks through the door, whether it be a bus driver, a secretary, or a teacher, administrator, mm-hmm. or superintendent. There are criteria through FBI checks, through local checks, through checking with the police, and through an interview process that we're looking for wholesome people with kid skills mm-hmm. and family skills that happen to also have technical skills. And I think that standard, which is the same standard we use in policy to select teachers and paraeducators, is the same standard we're thinking of with this. That's why we call them teachers. Mm-hmm. And that standard is well entrenched in TSPC standards and expectations and in Oregon State statute. Mm-hmm. And I don't think ODE would have a problem with it.
Okay. Representative Reardon, you have a question?
Several, actually.
Pardon?
Several.
We'll give you several.
Okay. So totally understand the issue you're trying to address and really interested in the number of programs you're doing. So, but I'm also, I really understand this because until I got my new career here, I was teaching a high school class, and one of the issues I've been trying to address for the last couple of years is where do we get that next generation of teachers, mm-hmm. and exactly what you're trying to do, which is how do we get people from industry that are prepared to be successful in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is this, and this is something, I was a teacher, then I went into industry, then I taught again. Both times were a struggle. Maybe it's just me, but teaching is very challenging, and mm-hmm. you go in there, and I don't think anybody who's not been a teacher can fully appreciate the difficulty of managing any class.
Mm-hmm.
It's the example I use is kind of silly, but if your experience is organizing the wrenches in your shop, that's one thing, but if you're trying to organize 30 eager learners, that's an entirely different experience. And even going into teaching, back into teaching, after having been out of it for 20 years, I struggled. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the worst years of my life. The growth experience, shall we say. Second, third year, on and on, it got better and better, and I probably became reasonably successful at it. But it's a huge challenge, and it wasn't just me. When I first got back in, I was a substitute teacher for a year, and one of the people that I subbed for was at a East County school, and the young man was about 32 years old in an automotive class, and he was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. He could not come to work.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a really ace mechanic, nice young guy. You'd look at him, you'd think that he would just really resonate with kids. They ate him alive, literally. So that's why I've really got reservations about what you're trying to do, and a lot of questions. Recognizing the problem, we need more teachers for these shops because we're trying to grow these programs, but they've got to be qualified teachers. It's not fair. I don't think it's fair to the individual. So I just passed a bill that I worked on for over a year, working with Department of Education, with TSPC, with the OEA, with people from industry, and it is a bill to set up training education program for people that want to get from industry and get into teaching. Mm-hmm. So that's a mere matter, of course, getting some funding to have those training programs opened up. But House Bill 2624,
mm-hmm.
and that's not exactly what you're trying to do. It's not going to be quite as quick,
mm-hmm.
But it's the same, trying to same solve the same problem. I'm really concerned about how hard that is to just take somebody off the street, more or less, and put them in a classroom. So having said all of that, quick questions. How many hours per week are you talking about?
Well, the people that we've actually been looking at, we're looking at maybe 5 hours a week.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
How much supervision? Are they working with a team all the time? Or
not all the time, but some. We have an expectation that they would typically be part of a team, but they would have the opportunity. For instance, a framer might very well be go to a site where framing is occurring, and they might not be supervised while they're with those kids framing. But that wouldn't occur until we were moderately confident, and that person was moderately confident that they could go out and that the kids in them have a rapport for success. Because, you know, I was in the classroom for 25 years. I consulted as a physicist. I was an industrial hygienist. I was a journeyman meat cutter. That's how I got through college. I understand what you're saying, moving from place to place in the mm-hmm. education business. But it's about the person, and I think you guys are aware that, what is it, 3 out of 5 teachers quit in the first 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And only about 1 in 6 make it from I'm going to be a teacher to I am a teacher. So it's a hard profession. Mm-hmm. Very challenging. People don't give it near the credit that it should get. But we know that, and we know that these are persons who need our active, genuine support, and that they need our active, genuine professional development. And whether that be help from an ESD or help internally, we do a great deal of professional development in Baker, a great deal. And we would certainly be with them in every sense. Their administrator will definitely be in a room with them, checking off the boxes. And remember, you got the educator effectiveness evaluation system, and it has very clear criteria, and in Baker at least, it's hard to slip by the cracks with what's going on there. We have vastly increased the amount of supervision and support that's provided to teachers, and when you call somebody a teacher, you put them under that venue. And House Bill 3166 includes a phrase that says if they fail, they're not in it anymore. You know, they've been dismissed.
Okay.
And we accept that as a criteria.
Okay. Yeah, if you're correct, we're getting tons of questions in not as much time. So,
sure.
Are there any amendments?
Hack is next. Representative Hack is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. And then you're after that.
I just wanted to comment. I really appreciate what Representative Reardon had to say. I think that we're moving in the right direction, obviously, with the CTE, the need out there for these types of teachers. And I know that, you know, folks need to be taught welding and all these things. I do think that it's important that we put some faith in our administrators and that they're going to know what's working and what's not. I know that I personally know someone that wasn't able to teach in the state of Oregon. Phenomenal person. They've been in the industry, left our state, went to Idaho, and this last year was named the Agricultural Teacher of the Year.
Yeah.
And while I respect what Representative Reardon had to say, I get that even teachers struggle. I think it goes back to the individual being able to do the work, whether you're a licensed teacher or not. But again, I would hope that we would put faith in our administrators to know what's working and what's not, and to intervene for students. I think it's important that we think about doing what's best for kids, and we have got to get kids into CTE programs and give them those opportunities. So are we going to be completely stifled by regulations and hold us back from really teaching kids and letting them love learning? There's got to be a way that we can work through this. So I commend you for bringing it forward. I thank you for that. I know it's difficult, and I understand this is a hard situation. There's a lot of different thoughts about it, but I just hope that we really truly think about what's best for kids and moving them forward in the CTE and let them love learning. And I know that there's some teachers out there that come from industry that love what they do and know how to teach.
Appreciate that.
Because of that. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Springer and then McLean.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And not seeing any
amendments in OLAS, so certainly I think we're still talking about the original bill here, mm-hmm. and a couple things that I noticed and then I want to ask about on those. I certainly see some safety net provisions in this bill. It's a one-year renewable license, mm-hmm. so they get the one year at a time for what, the first 5 years, I think the bill says, which I think that is really good. That's a great probationary period, frankly. And I'm also seeing here that there would be a community accreditation committee selected by the school board of 5 members. Mm-hmm. So talk to me, first question, talk to me a little bit about what that would be, because there seems to be some oversight here, and there seems to be some clear expectations that can be spelled out for folks. And I would assume that people that are great at this particular industry but don't particularly like kids, I'm hoping won't apply. And I'm kind of guessing they won't.
They will last 3.5 hours.
I'm really thinking that they should have the astuteness to know that. But talk to me a little bit about that, and then the bill specifically addresses identify methods for measuring performance. I see those two keys as significant to shore this up, and certainly addresses concerns I would have about maybe having the wrong person there. So talk to me about what those two things would practically look like, please.
Okay, what we were thinking of when we thought about the community committee was how CTE is very carefully monitored by the Perkins Group.
Yep.
So you bring in a crew, and they have a conversation with the VOAG teacher or whoever about what the community needs and what the VOAG teacher is providing and what FFA and so on, okay? And that's very much what we were thinking about. So we want citizens of the community that are not necessarily connected to the board but answer to the board and are not necessarily connected to the administrators but will tell the administrators what's going on to help us with the oversight of who, what, why, and what they did. And the person that we bring in to do a particular task is going to answer to that committee both prior, during, and post. So that is an oversight of community persons that will give the instructor some good quality feedback, we hope, from families, community, and expectations. As far as actual performance standards, what we're looking at will be examinations of student performance and showing that in an evaluation by the student of the teacher, the students believe that the teacher communicated with clarity. You know, if it's about diesel mechanics, I know when I taught at Oregon State, the students were allowed to evaluate us, and that really caused a great deal of angst occasionally when a student said, "You speak gobbledygook well." We didn't appreciate that. We'd rather have students that said, "I really enjoyed the way you went deep on this area and this other area, but you might improve by this." Okay? So when we're talking about student performance, we're talking about students who can, in fact, go and frame a wall. So that's a pretty simple measure if what you're teaching is framing. And at the same time, we're talking about students who will report to the committee what the teacher said, did, and behaved, and whether or not that person is doing a good job. And we have 5 years of those reports to establish a solid trend line and build a high-quality professional. And we think we've built that into this law, and we think we've built that into our concept. Does that answer your question?
Brief follow-up? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Please make your answer brief, or she's going to yell at me. That sounds to me like a higher bar. I'm not discounting education. I'm not discounting all of those pieces, but a higher evaluation bar than we have for some of our teachers. Is that correct? Reporting back, students reporting to a committee about a teacher's performance, that seems pretty big.
But these are persons.
Now remember, keep that answer short. She's going to yell at me.
I'll be as brief as possible then. These are persons who have not gone through the classic process of being evaluated by TSPC. So we want to make sure that locally we have a good grip on their success.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, I was told that there were no amendments, so it does look like TSPC would be involved.
No amendments yet. In fact, if I could just give a little background, because the initial drafter of the bill asked if because there were some concerns dealing with, and we'll bring this out in a couple of minutes. And so actually I told Representative Benz, I said, let's see how the hearing goes before we put amendments into LC that have to be amended. Okay. And amended. So it's like, let's LC a little bit first.
Thank you very much. I have all my questions answered.
Okay. Representative Barreto.
Well, I just don't want all to escape. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Without me saying something, I'm just getting to meet Walt this year, and the way he thinks out of the box in this bill, I really like it, and I think this is what we need more of, and I think we ought to work to see how we make this work, not to put a lot of sideboards on it so it constricts it. I totally agree with Representative Hack's assessment. So.
We'll keep that down as a record that he totally agrees with you, okay? Yeah. It's on record. And this is kind of my observation, because when I first saw the bill, and I come out of the North Clackamas School District, which for decades we have had the Occupational Skills Center, and when I was involved in that, just about all of the teachers at North Clackamas did not have the regular teaching certificate. They had a vocational certificate. And going through the TSPC website, there are endorsements for a lot of vocational areas. And I know that the people that I worked with at Saban did not have college degrees. They came out of the trades. Some of them did because they were nurses and they were, you know, communications people. And so, first of all, this is a great idea, especially in an area as small as Baker and as far away from the hub of where everything else is happening. Not that things aren't happening in Baker City, but they're not. Anyway, so I guess one of my questions, and I know that Director Chamberlain's here if you have some of the answers, but I think looking at this and some of the questions here, is the question is, is there a path now for some sort of a TSPC licensure for the folks that are that you're looking at? That's kind of one question to look at down the road. The second thing is I don't know if it's still the same, but with TSPC, you can actually teach 10 hours outside of where your licensure area is. And so it's one of these things that if your trades folks are teaching these kids less than 10 hours a week, it's not a TSPC issue, at least with licensure. It's more on the district. But what I would like to see is just with this bill, the avenue of being able to go through and see if some of your folks maybe are already on the path to licensure and they don't know it, and then also what they can do within the parameters with TSPC. Because I think it's not only with TSPC is to get good people, but it's also to ensure safety for the district. And that's with the background checks and all of that kind of thing. So, I think this is a fantastic idea. And it's one that I think is really something that you can go through in the more rural areas. But I think there's going to be some tweaking, and that's why with Representative Benz, I said, let's not amend it yet. But there might be some amendments down the road. So, and also, there is something that's coming down the pike in workforce development that deals with licensure for non-traditional teaching roles, I guess it is. And then the last thing is also, and just kind of the concern that TSPC had, is that if these are people that would be teaching like engineering, what would be considered science or math classes,
they have to be highly qualified.
Well, they do, and then we run into the problems with ESEA and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
they have
and you were talking pretty much things that were not science and math.
We're out of core most of the time.
Yeah. So, Representative Reardon and Representative Springer.
I just want to make sure that sometimes my comments don't come out the way I hope that they would. I don't want to seem unsupportive of the concept. I'm just trying to raise some past experiences and would be happy to work. And I did talk to Representative Benz last night and made him aware of some concerns as well.
Yeah.
So trying to keep things moving. But I also do have a bill that's addressing that would allow CTE teachers to teach teach core classes and working through that process. So lots going on. That's just on your...
I think what you have is a bill, you have a futuristic bill in front of us. and one that just because of the change in what the kids need, in because of what the jobs are out there, I think it's going to be kind of an evolution of standards and practices and that kind of thing. Other questions? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I could maybe throw in the mix, since we're going to have an amendment conversation potentially, mm-hmm. I would love to entertain the idea of perhaps a pilot program. Mm-hmm. And I bet we have a district that would be willing to do that, knowing full well that everybody would be watching extremely close. But I represent some small districts. We just have a hard time getting to a position where we can offer certain electives, that we can offer things. And I'm not talking about lowering standards. I'm talking about changing them so we can have people that fit. And so certainly I would love maybe that it would be entertained that one of those amendments be a pilot project with one or two districts, not just maybe Baker. I'm sure you're not the only person out there struggling with this and have some ideas about this, but I'd like to maybe see that in the mix.
Well, and the one thing I like, too, is how many kids out of how many are in this tech program?
Well, last year we had 120. We have 300 signed up right now out of 480.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's incredibly popular in Baker.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think a lot of us that were teachers, that's what kids get up and go to school for.
Yeah, well, for the 300.
Yeah, the 300. 100 another, yeah. So, anyway, are there any questions, comments, whatever? I think a lot of really good ideas have come out, you know, where the bill is going to go from here. I'm not quite sure, but I like the idea of a pilot project. I was going to say, if Ms. Chamberlain had anything that she wanted to add on this, because it looks like what we're looking at is maybe a pilot project, and we would definitely have a willing district. But I think what it is to look out and see what sort of problems could we face, and can we deal with them before the feds walk in? How's that?
So. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I think you had the right of it. There are a lot of solutions that we currently have, and I was going to follow Mr. Wagner out the door and and help him now, because there's many people we could license right this minute. This bill has a lot of potential with minor amendments, and if you remove the highly qualified pieces, which frankly are on the table to be cut in the current ESEA reauthorization, so that also opens up opportunities. His concept of a group that has the HQ teachers working as a team covers the legal part of it, but we'd be happy to work on this bill with him to make it work.
Because I noticed under the endorsement, I mean, there's things like agriculture, computer technology, construction, design and applied arts, engineering technology, financial services, health, hospitality, tourism, leisure and fitness, all of these kind of things. So it looks like the framework is there for some of this.
Correct.
And I appreciate your willingness to work with these guys and maybe come up with something. Okay. Any other questions or comments or things you like, Representative Springer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I personally take some level of confidence in the fact that most of these programs, you're probably going to access some of your Perkins dollars, and there's a whole slew of federal requirements there. So you're not going to have that money if you're not if you're violating any licensure requirements.
Yeah. I didn't think about that, but you're right. So
we did.
Anyway. Okay, well, I appreciate you coming all this way to talk about your program, because this is a changing face of education for sure. Okay, thank you. Anybody else want to speak on this issue? Okay, if not, well, we should close a work session or a public hearing on House Bill 3166 and open up a work session on House Bill. Which one? 3151.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3151 was previously heard by the committee on the 6th of March. The committee has been asked to consider the -2 amendments, which replace the measure entirely. The -2s establish the Task Force on Virtual Public Charter Schools. It directs the Task Force to examine specific issues related to sponsorship of a virtual public charter school, requires the Task Force to report to the Legislative Assembly, and sunsets the Task Force in 2016. The, also posted on OLIS just now at 1 o'clock were the dash threes, which build off the dash twos and slightly modify the language in the dash twos to give specific focus to virtual charter schools and task force itself.
Okay, so we have one speaker so far signed up. Anticipated speaker, Mr. Williams from PPS. We can bring it. Unless you want to, you guys want to come up? Okay, Marshall Koba and Mary Kramer.
Chair Doty, members of the committee, David Williams with Portland Public Schools. You recall original House Bill 3151, which you had heard previously, presented an alternative method for sponsorship of very large online charter schools in the state, asking the state to pick up sponsorship of those schools when they outstrip the capacity of their local district. At the request of the chair, we worked to come up with a way to review this. I know the Department of Ed had some questions about how this would be managed and how it would take place, and there were maybe some other issues in the bill. So we sought to try to figure those out in the interim. So you have a dash two amendment before you that would create a task force that would give the full interim, so not just till the next short session, but to give full consideration in the full 2017 session. The task force will report back a recommended method or recommendations, whether it be something new or even sticking with the existing structure around sponsorship and oversight of virtual charter schools in the state, and that's the amendment you have before you today. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Did you guys want to talk on the amendments, or?
Sure.
Yeah, we can do that, and then we'll open up everything up to questions.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kramer, and I represent Connections Education. Connections is the curriculum and program provider for Oregon Connections Academy. It's a non-for-profit online school, most well-known as ORCA. Although we are not wild about yet another task force, this bill has turned into something that could have some very positive outcomes if properly focused. There are issues in the virtual school world that need some unbiased, thoughtful analysis. This provides the opportunity for the task force to take on this work. For example, regarding virtual school accountability, virtual schools tend to draw students who have not succeeded in a traditional environment. A high percentage of our high schoolers that enroll are deficient in credits when they enroll. Yet Oregon's school rating system struggles to accurately measure schools that tend to draw kids who are academically behind. The problem is Oregon's system has too small of a weight for growth scores, and we overemphasize four-year graduation rate. Other states have recognized this problem and have an alternative accountability framework for virtual schools to deal with it. Arizona just last month adopted an innovative framework for virtuals that recognizes the reality of student populations they tend to draw. Regarding sponsorship of ORCA, I really want to deal with that just a little bit. Our school is currently moving to a new authorizer, Santiam Canyon School District. They have negotiated a very rigorous contract with metrics for academic performance that are higher than our current law requires. The superintendent, Todd Miller, was the executive director of ORCA before moving home to become the superintendent of Santiam Canyon School District. Todd knows our model, its benefits, and its areas of struggle. He and his board have had very serious conversations regarding the impact of authorizing a virtual public school before agreeing to become the sponsor. This is a match made in heaven due to the hands-on experience Todd has had in running ORCA previously. Todd also realized the struggle a school has in not being in control of the special ed needs of its students and was willing to let ORCA do what schools do. Educate kids they know firsthand in the best way possible. This is especially true with special ed. Many of you are new to the Education Committee and have not realized that in almost every session since 2009, we have either authorized or requested authorization of a virtual school task force. This bill would create the third task force in 6 years to analyze this unique and necessary educational option we offer Oregon students. We respect the job you do and the wide range of subject areas you have to provide direction to for so many stakeholders. We truly want to help. We welcome you to our school and into our families' homes that use this educational opportunity. And we thank you for your service to students in our state. We would ask that you would vote no on the original bill, House Bill 3151, and that we would amend this bill to deal with some of the issues that are truly affecting virtual schools going forward. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Okay, thank you. Marshall, do you have anything to add or about the bill and the amendment?
I do. Yeah. Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. I'm Marshall Koba, representing the Oregon Virtual Academy, a virtual public charter school that has a charter with the North Bend School District. We have 118 students in a K-12 school in North Bend. And if there must be a task force moving forward, I believe the Dash 3 amendments are mine. They add the original bill had two representative of public charter schools. These would be representatives of a virtual public charter school. If we must have a work group, then we suggest that a focus on areas of concern. We must keep in mind that while virtual public charter schools may have grown beyond what was initially conceived, they have done so because they are a great option for the students and families that choose to be educated in this manner. These schools are an attractive and quality school of choice for these families. These schools are meeting a need in the state that was missing and was therefore sending students into a system or school that was not the right fit for them at that time. Oregon's virtual schools are the most regulated schools in Oregon. We meet high standards now and have for many years. We are accountable and we meet a high bar to continue to offer our successful educational model to students across the state. We are proud of our role in helping to educate K-12 students for the modern world. We have had task forces before. Some of the recommendations were implemented, some were not. This task force appears to be replowing ground that is in current statute or has been discussed. If you go to what the task force shall do on page 2 of the amendments, task force shall examine issues related to the sponsorship of a virtual public charter school, including the proper oversight. There's plenty of oversight in current statute. Quality education practices, we meet and exceed the education standards of the state. B, the appropriateness of the sponsorship. I think that's been well discussed. The practice formally or informally proposing a sponsorship to multiple school districts, that conversation has been had. And other things that the task force, at least the amendment, talks about. We support the amendments if there must be a task force that clarifies that two members of the committee represent virtual public charter schools. It is important that those closest to the issues be the ones that are able to discuss and decide on how to proceed. We are proud of our schools and feel that if a work group is to move forward, that the Dash 3 amendments be moved forward as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any questions? Representative Springer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I want to apologize to some of, well, I want to apologize that you'll see that the Dash 3s were posted at 1 o'clock, but we didn't put in for those until like 11:30 or 12 today. Mm-hmm. So that's why they are so late in coming. And the reason being is we have charter schools on the Dash 2 amendments, representatives of charter schools. And that's great if we're talking about a bricks and mortar charter school issue, but we're not. Mm-hmm. So to me, that just doesn't seem to make sense to have that group there, not virtual group there, if we're going to have a task force. And I know that there may be another amendment
that would have one
yet,
each.
Yet coming, but I strongly advocate for online folks talking about online stuff opposed to bricks and mortar folks talking about online stuff.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Okay.
Representative McClain.
Well, I am now completely confused about, are there two amendments coming or is there one amendment coming?
You have the dash threes in OLIS that were posted at 1 o'clock that
I don't have those because I didn't bring my computer today.
Oh. It says two virtual.
Two virtual.
Yes.
And then there's another one that says?
One of each. One virtual, one bricks and mortar.
Okay. All right, so then I have a comment or a question or both.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, I appreciate what you were saying. I always believe it's important to have the practitioners there when you're discussing something like a system or improvement to a system. And so I would support the dash three or the dash whatever it is, dash four, I guess, to make sure that folks are at the table that are actually doing the work. And that's really important. I also, though, do feel that I may be new to the committee, but I'm not new to education.
Right.
And it's one of those things where you may have had two other task force, but this year at least there have been things raised that I'm interested in and concerned about, not in a negative way or a positive way, but just in an informational way. And so I don't think that we need to discount task force. And I think it's important for us to think that they may be a solution driver. They may be something that confirms something we know, or it may be something that supports something we love. So I think it's important to not think of as task force as an unnecessary burden, but as an opportunity. And I look forward to getting to vote yes on this task force.
Yep.
Eventually.
Yeah. I mean, the alternative is just to have the original bill go forward. So that's another thing that we looked at. Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so with anybody else want to speak on House Bill 3151? Okay, with that, I close a public hearing on House Bill 3151 and open up a work session on House Bill 2411.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2411 changes the name of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to the Professional Educator Standards Board. It updates terms for teacher education programs and institutions. It streamlines licensure structures for teachers and administrators. It increases the maximum amount allowed for fees for issuance of license. The committee's been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments, which reduce the proposed fee cap from the introduced measure. There is the committee has received a no revenue impact statement and a fiscal light statement, and with that fiscal light has come a request from the Legislative Fiscal Office to move the measure to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Frederick.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2411, dated March 9th, 2015.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2411, dated March 9th, 2015. Is there any discussion?
Is this on the amendment?
Yes.
Pardon? Oh, thank you.
Yes.
This is just on the amendment right now. Okay, is there any objection? Okay, see none. The Dash 1 amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 2111 to the floor. 2411, sorry. I move House Bill 2411 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2411 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question maybe for Richard or whoever. We're talking about this being the name change, but this is also the redesign.
Madam Chair,
we were talking about the redesign.
This is part of the redesign. That next bill that the committee has scheduled, 2412, is the kind of second half. This is the first part in this.
Okay.
2412 is the second part.
Okay. Mayor, thank you. Follow up then. So I'm likely going to support this. I've had a lot of angst over this bill, and I've made that clear, and Mrs. Chamberlain's been great to have conversations with me in my office about this. And I know I'm dabbling just slightly here in the next bill, but there's redesign pieces in this bill. I have some level of assurance that this redesign is going to be delivered
and implemented in a fairly protracted amount of time. I think the redesign is important, and it's too important to do in a way that doesn't set it up for success. Frankly, the idea of a name change is way below my radar and not a big deal for me. That we're having a lot of conversation about a name change. But I will hesitantly be supporting this, and I do hope that we're rolling this out in a way that sets it up for success, because our teachers have got to have a responsive system. We heard a bill in response to that today. So thank you, Mrs. Chamberlain, for the conversation that's given me some level of comfort. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Representative McLean.
Well, I remember the discussion about the fee itself, you know, and going from 500 to 350 in some areas and 50 to 40 and all of those types of things. And I just, we've heard so much that there's been a lack of resources, you know, in, you know, having enough staff and having enough ability. And so, you know, I even though I want to go forward with this, I still think we've got to assess how many resources do we need to do the best job, as Representative Springer was saying, so that we can make sure that we have the staff and we have the structure and we have the ability to serve the teachers that need the licensing work done. And so I just want to make sure that's not something we lose track of, because this may only get us partway there.
Right. Okay. It's higher than it was, but maybe one. Some people want to. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Any comments?
I will take that message to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Because we do have somebody on Ways and Means. Okay, any other discussion? Seeing none, could a clerk read the roll, please?
Representative Beretta.
Aye.
Representative Hatt.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Caluso.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer.
Aye.
Chair
Daugherty. Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Okay, with that, I close a work session on House Bill 2411 and open up a work session on House Bill 2412.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2412 removes outdated provisions and updated terminology related to teachers. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 4 amendments, which clarify statutory language pertaining to educator preparation programs. Dash 4 is also required the TSPC to adopt standards related to dyslexia education programs. Dash 4 is require TSPC to report on adoption of those standards to the Legislative Assembly no later than October 1st, 2016. And the Dash 4 is remove references to the Minority Teacher Act of 1991 because the committee dealt with those in House Bill 3375. There is a no revenue impact and there are no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact statements issued.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Could I have Richard go over just once again very briefly the dyslexia changes?
Okay. And so because are there people that worked on the Dash 4s that maybe would like to speak to them?
Yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah,
we've got some people in the back.
I'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If you guys could talk to the Dash 4s, not only on some of the preparation thing, but especially the dyslexia part. Okay? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. The portion of the bill and the amendments relating to dyslexia come out of Senate Bill 612, and the original requirements were to require every higher ed program that prepares educators to have a dyslexia course. In the alternative, we worked with Decoding Dyslexia to focus on the courses that focus on reading, which is early childhood, elementary, special education, and the reading specialist. And we will be requiring higher ed programs to come in and report to the commission what they're doing to incorporate dyslexia standards, which we're required to set into their programs so that teachers coming out who work in these areas are better prepared to identify children who suffer from the spectrum of disorders with dyslexia and help them get on the right track way before third grade.
Excellent, thank you.
Yeah. Does that answer your question? Okay, any other questions? Representative Beretta.
I remember this, and I think back back when we heard the first testimony that one out of five kids had dyslexia or some form of it, and, you know, that just kind of stuck with me because I was astounded by that. I know people that have dyslexia where they read backwards or they see things backwards. You know what? Can you just explain what a mild form and an extreme form is and how many of these kids actually have the extreme form maybe that inhibits their learning?
Yes, I know. Oh, sorry. Chair Dorey and members of the committee and Representative Barreto, I'm Jennifer Capalonga from Decoding Dyslexia. I do not have exact numbers on where percentages within the spectrum, but we do know that one in five have some level of dyslexia. At least one quarter of those are severe enough to qualify for special education. We know a lot. Also, there are a lot of kids who are severe enough, but they don't qualify for special education because of the rubrics that special education uses to identify students. But those students are reading 2 to 3 levels below grade level. More mild is students who are not able to keep up with classwork.
Okay. You had mentioned, you had mentioned that teachers should have additional education to be able to diagnose this, and I'm just wondering how much the additional education is going to help actually if there's such a broad spectrum of this. I'm thinking about the efficiency, I guess, of the bill.
So most of these children are served in regular education classrooms. And teachers like myself, who was special education qualified, even though I taught in a regular education classroom, have no background. I had no background on what dyslexia was, what accommodations to use for students, how to teach them the basics about reading. So it would begin to fill that gap.
Ms. Chamberlain? Madam Chair, Representative Barreto, another thing to be aware of is Senate Bill 612 is still very active with amendments being worked on, and it includes provisions for professional development of the current workforce. So our portion of the bill is for preparing educators as they enter the workforce, and then there's another part of this whole concept, a continuum of service for these children, including professional development and identification for those who are already out of teacher preparation, which may help.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Representative Frederick.
Chair Dougherty, I move House Bill 24. I move to adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2412, dated March 30th, 2015.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves to adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2412, dated March 30th, 2015. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Dougherty, I move House Bill 2412 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
No.
Nope, got the wrong one.
That could be my mistake.
I withdraw my motion. And Chair Dougherty, I move House Bill 2412 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2412 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. How about 2412 as amended?
As amended to the floor.
Get the wrong script here. With a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Will the clerk read the roll, please?
Representative
Pack.
Aye.
Representative
McLean.
Aye.
Representative Caruso.
Aye.
Representative Verda.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer.
Aye.
Chair
Dougherty. Aye. Okay, with that motion passes, do we have a carrier? Would I like to carry this?
If nobody wants to, I will, but somebody else can surely do it. I'm happy
Well,
to.
If not, I will.
Okay, Margaret will.
No, pardon?
Okay. Madam Chair.
Okay.
So are you carrying the bill?
No, you can.
Oh, okay. How about Dory?
Oh, I'm going to do that.
Okay, Dorothy, okay.
This is what
always
means.
Okay.
Okay. With that, I close a work session on House Bill 2412 and open up a work session on
3291.
On House Bill 3291.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3291 allows school district and post-secondary institutions of education to apply for funding to form a K-20 partnership. It appropriates $2.5 million from the general fund. It sunsets the funding authority June 30, 2017, and declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015. It has no revenue impact, but there has been a fiscal statement issued, and so there has been a request to send the measure to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 3291 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And this time I mean it, the Joint Committee on Ways
we
and
really
Means.
We really mean it. Representative Frederick moves House Bill 3291 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Okay, seeing none. Will the clerk read the roll, please?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Wong?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes and the bill is sent to the committee on Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, I close the work session on House Bill 3291 and open up a work session on House Bill 3380.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3380 directs the Early Learning Division to administer a preschool program. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 2 amendments, which change the 60% salary requirement for lead preschool teachers to minimum salary requirements established by the Early Learning Council. Directs the ELC, the Early Learning Council, to establish minimum salary requirements for preschool teachers and to develop strategies to strive to increase the mean salary for lead preschool teachers in addition to the content of the introduced measure. There is no revenue impact on the Dash 2s, but the Legislative Fiscal Office has issued a fiscal light statement and requested the bill be moved to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Why don't you open it, because I do have a question or two. So,
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3380, dated March 24, 2015.
Okay. Representative Frederick moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3380, dated March 24, 2015. And I do have a discussion and question, and it deals with is there somebody here from ODE or from the early childhood? And I think you know what my question is going to be. Thank you. Thank you. Forget to identify yourself. The
yes.
record, then I'll answer the question.
Chair Doherty and committee, for the record, David Mandel, policy director at the Early Learning Division, and I have Don Barberis, my colleague Don Barberis, with me, who's early learning specialist to help answer any questions.
Thank you. First of all, this is a great bill because I think that it's kind of long overdue. But one of the things that was brought out in testimony dealt with the professional training and the degrees and so on of people, especially that are in the private daycare that, you know, are licensed by the state of Oregon and so on and so forth. And I think the question that was brought up by a couple of people is some of the people that run the programs that are, you know, very highly rated and so on, have degrees, bachelor's, but not necessarily in early childhood education. And so is that going to be an issue with the rating and the so on and some of the requirements that you guys will have?
Chair Doherty, I think this is a really important question, and actually part of the reason that we really think it's important to have a planning year as part of this, because I think there are a number of questions like that. But what I would say is, you know, just at a I think there's sort of two really important aspirations as part of this bill. One is that we want to support a workforce that has the training and qualifications that we know are really important to child outcomes, but we also really want to make sure that there are real and viable pathways and support to help folks get there.
you know, that's a complicated push and pull and figuring out right ways of doing that. So I think that's one of the reasons that we're really looking forward to having that planning time and that rulemaking process to really engage stakeholders precisely in those questions. Because I think once you unpack, there's also a lot of very specific questions about what combinations of additional early childhood courses and things like that. So we really do want to make sure that there are reasonable pathways to get there. So I think that's really one of the things that we are hoping to spend that planning year engaging child care workforce, our community colleges, and other parts of, and other pieces of that puzzle in that conversation to really make sure that we are providing the supports to get the workforce there in a reasonable fashion and not creating unreasonable burdens as part of that.
Because there's somebody that could have been a great provider for years and years and years, but has a degree in communications. So that's one thing you want to look at. Did you want anything to add or just?
David's really spoken to the issue. There are processes in place that allow that pathway, and I think just refining it so we can look at people that might already have degrees but need to just tighten up a little bit around early childhood qualifications. So.
Great. And if you just identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. And I'm Dawn Barbera's early learning specialist.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Is there any other discussion on the amendment? Representative McLean?
So I'm reading it, and it's the dash two, right?
It is the dash
sorry.
Two.
So basically what it does is it just sets the program back a year for the study to be more complete or to be more of a circle to make sure that we've gotten all the way around on all the goals plus all the qualification issues. Mm-hmm. So it just sets it back a year.
And my understanding is that what the dash two is, it makes it more explicit on some of the teacher requirements in the training requirements in the bill that there's an opportunity to provide time, space, and plans to get there rather than making that a requirement from the beginning. There were already some opportunities for waivers, but I think that this language really builds that out and really puts the focus on providing those pathways to get there.
Okay. And we're getting a report back?
Excuse me?
We're getting a report back in a year.
Yes. That was already in the original bill in my Chair Doherty committee. What this does is also include in the report back to the legislature information on salaries, education levels, as well as turnovers of teachers in the program to really help us assess are we getting that balance right.
Okay. Okay. Is there any other discussion? Is there any objection? Okay. If not, the dash two amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 3380 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Representative Frederick moves House Bill 3380 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Okay. Seeing none, if you could read the roll, please, Tia.
Representative Caluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative
Wilson? Aye. Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Pack?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. It goes on its way to Ways and Means. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3380. And we are carrying over House Bill 3151, House Bill 3166, and House Bill 3499. With that, I think that concludes our business for the day. And I adjourn the Committee on House Committee on the Day. And I adjourn.